All of our music from the 70s, the 80s, 90s, and current in all different genres.
And we share all of our nonsense and memories. I really hope people listen in.
Me too. See you there.
And good afternoon. It's 4 o'clock. Thanks for tuning in to CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. This is Finding a Voice, a spoken word program airing here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And coming up today in the first hour from this year's Poets at Art Fest four-day poetry festival, you'll hear the very final, not yet aired session of it. I've been working on this for several weeks now. And what you'll hear today is the second of the two open mics that were part of it. This one held on June 30th. And in it, you'll hear readings by Fiona McMillan, Ken Chin, Melissa Thorne, Richard Ty Grove, Anna Johnson, Olivia Parent, Jared Augustin, Don Spector, and Gia Arcos. Instagram Las Solas the Waves. And sorry, I had to sound that out. And then Joe Cardinal, and then myself. And in the second hour, you're going to hear a selection of pieces from three of a few multimedia poetry CDs I have. Geode, Music and Poetry, that came out in 1998. I'll talk more about it in the second hour, all of these. Also, We Apologize for Any Inconvenience, which came out in 2009. Quantum Nostalgia Blues 2023. And then finish off to take us into the next show just before 6 o'clock with Bruce Coburn with some of his cuts off of the Al Purdy songbook. And just a top of the hour thing I like to do is mention that occasionally some poetry, spoken word, or music played on this show may contain strong language, but it's all played in its entirety with content unedited to honor the creative integrity of both the author and the piece. And I've been looking forward to finally airing these readings in this first hour. Again, that's I think we were 6 or 7 or maybe 8 weeks even of airing all of the readings from that festival. So it's nice to kind of tie it up today. And they were wonderful open mic readings. I did air the first session of these back on couple of weeks ago of the first open mic. And that session, that open mic had 3 back-to-back rounds. This one today has 2 in that session. As I will today, I stopped, just paused it long enough to reintroduce who was in each round. So I'll tell you what, I've already mentioned who all is going to, and you'll hear me again. But coming up in the first round, let's just do this. You're going to hear Fiona, Ken, Melissa, Ty, Anna, Olivia, Jared, Don, Gia, Joe, and me. So let's just roll with it here. Here we go. Okay. Up first, we have Fiona McMillan.
Woo! All right. Hello. Okay. This is called $48, and it's my first time reading it in front of people, so I'm very excited. Thank you. Thanks. All right. The week after we broke up, I spent $48 on chai tea lattes. I sat in coffee shops every day, telling people I was working on my writing, when in reality I was writing scripts about myself, about movies that I wanted to watch, about anything but you. I didn't think twice about it at the time, because nothing really mattered then. The world had lost its structure. And I wish I could say that in an I loved you so much that when you left, so did my reality type of way, but that would be a lie. I do not like lying, so I will not continue with that one. I spent $48 on chai tea lattes for 7 consecutive days after we broke up because nothing really meant much of anything anymore. I wondered who my husband would be, who I would take home next, and I don't know why I feel the urge to write husband there. I am a lesbian, making you very much a person bearing flaps. Your name was Ella then, a beautiful name for a beautiful girl, neither of which were things you wanted to be. You changed it to Eli 3 days after we ended, and I found your timing laughably sensible. I do not think you wanted to be a woman. In fact, I'm still not convinced of what you wanted to be at all. All I knew is that it wasn't going to be mine. I asked you once if you wanted to be a man. You looked at me and said, I swear that I don't. And I told you that when you swear on something, it makes it sound bad, but there's nothing bad about wanting to own a penis. I asked you if that's why you wanted to change your name, and you only half agreed. A sheepish nod between sheltered gazes and fluorescent cheeks. I think you didn't like me because I asked too many questions. I think you loved me because I asked too many questions. I asked you things that you had never been posed before. I mean, it was pretty hard not to. I don't think you spoke very much before me, not out of choice or necessity, just somewhere in a far too comfortable in-between. I don't think you spoke very much before me. I picked an easy target, sure, but you also set the bar far too low for that blown out of water love, for I was just curious. I guess not many others had been, and I think I scared you because I made you think. Saw things in you, noticed them with intention. I remembered them, and even worse, I repeated them back. I asked you how you felt about humanities, such as the weather and your social standing, but also your own bones, the way they hit your cotton sheets at night. I asked you why you mutilated yourself in the form of tight tapes and weltering scars. I asked you if it felt good. What was even worse, though, was what came after. Auburn eyes widening for a taste of knowledge, scanning his lips move tight. I wasn't just asking to look mysterious or to become a pillar of illusion. No, I wanted to know. And how sick is that? I wanted to know. I didn't want to love you, only understand you. And I think that distinction troubled you the most. I didn't want to love you, only understand you. Thank you.
Give Fiona another hand. Up next, we have Ken Chin.
It's been a while since I've been back. Actually, I haven't been here since before the pandemic. Mostly because I've, lost my vision. Most of it, anyways. But, you know, as writers, we don't have a choice about what we write. It's in us, and it just has to come out. And I found technology to help me. Okay, it's not really a poem. It's a short story. It's about the place where I work. I've worked there so long, I'm going to write about it. It's called the U Club. The University Club, or the U Club, as it is commonly called, is located at the south end of Queen's University by the lake. Built around the mid-19th century, it was called St. Lawrence Cottage at the time. Queen Victoria herself gave the land to the province of Canada at the time. The original building was demolished in the 1930s and the present house built. It has been a doctor's residence until the late 20th century. People must have been considerably shorter when the house was built, as reflected in the architecture. Today, tall people going down the original staircase will have to duck to avoid hitting their head on the ceiling. Adding to the weirdness of the club, in the 1970s, Queens took possession and added a huge dining room to the back of the house. So now, the back of the house is the front, and the front, with its gorgeous view of the lake, is now the back of the house. My involvement with the U Club came at the beginning of the 21st century when I was hired on as a prep cook dishwasher. Since then, I have found that the U Club is much more than it appears to be. Actually, I do not believe that anyone fully knows what the University Club really is. It could be a conduit for attracting entities from somewhere. It could be a door to other dimensions or to a different time and place. One thing for certain is that the U Club is a really good high-class restaurant where I work and deal with all the anomalies that aren't supposed to happen. The door in West Lakeview. On the second floor of the U Club, are two rooms with a view to the lake that you could die for. Appropriately named East Lake View and West Lake View, the two large rooms are used for dining when smaller groups do not require a much larger dining hall. In the back of West Lake View is a doorway, not a regular doorway that you can normally walk through, but a much smaller. Back in the days before the club, this would have been the back door of the house, and the door could have been led to a closet or to a balcony. Today, you open that strange little door and you will find a concrete cinder block wall, at least for most of the time. It's a wall. As for the other times, well, that's what this story is about. Now, I am aware of the ghost stories of the club and all the weirdness going on. Like the reason why Keith Lee, our former executive chef, would never work alone at the club at night. Apparently, one night, when he finished working at 2 a.m. and about to leave, he walked past the large mixer in the ground floor kitchen, right past a woman in a long white dress. She was a ghost. Since then, Keith has always worked with someone at night, usually me. I've also experiences that are unusual. One incident so strange, I sometimes wonder if it really happened at all. It was late spring after a wedding reception, and I was almost finished and went to empty the dumbwaiter downstairs. As I exited the kitchen, I heard the elevator doors open. Now, everyone's supposed to have left, and the doors locked. So when I see a figure coming down a darkened hallway, I was ready for anything. "Who are you?" I yelled out. "And why are you here?" It was an elderly lady in a dress and walking with a cane. Her dress didn't look like anything in 2025. More like it was from 1925. Definitely not one at a wedding party, I decided. "How did you get in here?" I kept questioning her as she approached me. The elderly lady with white hair and a cane stopped momentarily and smiled. "Oh, I have ways to get in here that you couldn't imagine. The doctor has brought me in here secretly many times past his nosy colleagues." "Doctor? What doctor?" I demanded of her. "Not important," she replied. "It was so long ago." As she walked past me, she stopped at the staircase. "Oh, these stairs, I remember them well," she said, patting the banister affectionately as if it was a pet. Since she was elderly and frail, I didn't want to physically stop her. I followed her into West Lakeview. "There's something I have to do. It won't take but a moment of your time." She saw the puzzled look on my face. "It's my time. I'm going to be young again." "Wait, what do you..." Before I could finish, she dropped her cane and opened a little door in West Lakeview. But it wasn't a wall behind the door. It was a blinding white light, and the woman immediately stepped into the light, closing the door behind her. Before I could reach the door, it opened again. She came out, only it wasn't the same person that went in. The clothes were the same, but this was a young woman in her late teens or early 20s. "Now that feels so much better," she said energetically, taking off out of the room. I ran after her, only to see her sliding down the banister of that grand old staircase and out the back door. I stood on top of the stairs for a moment, then screamed, "What happened?" I ran into West Lakeview, pulling that door open. It was that concrete block wall again. I fell back onto a nearby chair, sitting for a few minutes. I convinced myself that I imagined the whole thing. Maybe it was degreaser or sanitizer fumes that got to me. Nobody's gonna believe me anyways. I convinced myself that it was all in my head. It never happened. And I would truly believe it never happened, except that when I got up, I tripped over the cane that she dropped. Thank you.
Give Ken another hand.
Up next, we have Melissa Thorne. Bring her up.
Okay, so I wrote this poem for the CV2. They do a two-day poetry contest in April, and they give you 10 random words that you have to put into a poem in 48 hours. So I haven't had a chance to read this out loud, and I'm anxiously awaiting the results of the contest in July, so I thought I would read it here. It's called Company Man. You love the smell of raindrops on hot pavement. Insist it's different from petrichor. One is of nature and the other of man, you say. And if I borrow your mind, I can almost admire the asphalt ribbons, zip of wheels, crush of sound, and grind of bodies here. But eventually, I chafe under the milquetoast moon, resent the tangerine streetlights for dimming her face. I watch your ties in our closet agglomerate into a roiling snake ball, squirm under the covers when their hisses caress the shell of my ear. You slither into bed past midnight, and I try to whisper, company man, like the hippocorism it once was, but it comes out like horked phlegm. With it, a blessed lalakesia that slides against my tongue, frees me. I end things with words you'll comprehend, like synergy, actionable, notwithstanding, and circle back. But you still don't understand why I left to rest in a lonesome twin bed under a sable sky with quadruple the stars and a cantaloupe moon hung large above the tree line, where a chorus of spring peepers lulls me to sleep, singing words you never learned, never paid mind to, because it is an exchange freely given, not earned, and the trill of a red-winged blackbird never asks for anything in return.
And up next, Ty Grove. Let's bring him up.
Turn on the device. Happy Canada Day, by the way. I'm going to be reading later on in the day, so I'm just going to read one poem and then bow out during the come around. But this this poem is about Canada. Oh, Canada, we are proud Canadians, but as Canadians, we are Canada, a sovereign nation, strong, vast, and free, stretching proudly from coast to coast to coast. We know we are known on a global stage as peacemakers, not warriors. We are known as champions of human rights, as defenders of democracy. We are the stewards of breathtaking natural beauty. We are a multicultural nation blending our indigenous roots, French and English heritage, into global diversity, a mosaic of resilience and compassion. As a humanitarian nation, Canada, we stand tall and with quiet strength, firm values and open arms. United, we echo one voice of freedom, equality, and peace. Oh, Canada, so proud to be Canadian. Thanks.
And this is very casual, so I'm going to stop coming up here. I'm just going to do it from the back. It seems silly to do that. Anyway, up next, Anna Johnson. Let's bring her up.
Hi, everyone. Great to see everybody here. I've been here. It's my third day, so it's really exciting. All right. I do hold these Thursday night writing workshops, and it's like a writing group where we write together. If anybody's interested, there are flyers in the back, and then my card is in the back too. Anyway, I'm going to read a poem called Romeo. No, no, you will not do anymore, for I've lived in your gray shoe, fitting into your every wish, your every vision and fantasy, for 8 months, hardly breathing, gasping for air. Romeo, I need to erase you from my memory. You don't fit into it anymore. No, no, there are no more colors, no taste, no sound, no smell. I used to long for you, whirling, pining, literally running after you. When I bumped into when we bumped into one another along the verdant path near the soccer fields, longing for some order, spinning black and white soccer ball on white lines, vying for direction. A small, desperate child longing for a father she never met. The father who disowned her, who said no, no to her being born. Oh, father, I had carried your French name until I was adopted by my second father when I became a New Zealander. English tongue from Brazilian heritage, Rio de Janeiro, blistered by corruption, military dictatorship, and Republican reform. My life censored by coups of Romeos. Oh, Romeo, I never could tell where you were putting your foot or what was your route. I never knew what to say to appease you. I used to say, will you despise me tomorrow? Will my heart ache with sorrow? Will you borrow the thieves of my soul, never to return? My mind in shame stuck in the hedge of my throat. Not, not, my voice shut off. No tongue. Will the bird sing in my stead? I then began to talk like you, eat like you, sleep like you. I thought I may as well be you. Your footsteps drumming in my ears, blocking my hearing canals, blocking tunnels to the bright Rio sun on the white sand of Ipanema Beach, the clear blue Atlantic Ocean. Trail of tears, grieving my ancestry, French and Syrian, Portuguese and Tupi, the colonial steppes. I have always been afraid of your ghost, father, living in every Romeo I've met, mustache or beard, ginger, blonde or brunette, green eyes, blue or brown. Oh, so aloof. When will you release the knot from my shoulders? Will it be in minutes, days, or years? Will it be 100 or 1,000? I await while my spirit splits in pieces in the face of Romeos who haul shoes at me, stealing time. You stand, a faceless father. I can't even see your feet, for I've no photo of you, of your phantom, found in every Romeo's shoe, who break my pink heart in two. I was not even born when you denied my existence inside my mother's womb on this earth. At 15, I wanted to fit into your denial and leave this earth and get back to you. But you were born out of love, even if for an instant, said the British boarding school housemistress. And I took in her belief. A bee entering my ear, my heart. That will do, I suppose, to keep me on this earth for now, hanging on by two flimsy spider webs under the bright moon illuminated only by the sun. No light of its own. Has anyone known me before time? Who are the keepers of my soul? Among the veils of desire within wedding clouds, to reach to each Romeo, I've said, I do, until I could no longer fit into his shoe. White and red blood cells sucked dry, cells in pieces, teeters and tatters. When will I find my soul, cut the ties of failure, feed it, breathe it, bathe it, clean it in clean clothes? Find my way through the dark and embrace the child you abandoned. Lead it into the creation of time, the friendly winds that acknowledge the earth, where my own feet have belonged and will move on to a journey and flow in harmony. Black and white spires merging into one another in simple harmony.
I thought for the first round I should actually come back up here. Anyway, up next we have Olivia is a parent. Yeah, let's bring her up.
So this is what I just finished. And since it's the end of June, I thought that I should read it. It's called June Moon. June Moon, under you I feel my skin glow. Tonight, I'm at rest after early summer season sunburns, and I feel your hollowing fullness awaken me, feed me. You're like the avocado pit I crack my knife against to scoop the fatty green away. You're present and stubborn, yet so healthy. June moon, infuse my hopes and dreams into each individual star you've used to fill my night. Let me know what it feels like to burn, to laugh, to play with the soft feathers of my friend's hair, and to push my forehead against my mother's brow. Let me know what it feels like to grow from memories and in futures. Let me know that tomorrow you'll be just as full, even if you roll away into a new cycle. You're always there, June moon. When seasons change and the air's less sticky, I'll see you in every white eye that smiles back to mine, because you're not just you. You're everyone I've grown to love, June Moon.
Give Olivia another hand. Up next, Jared Augustine, is that right?
Yeah.
Augustine?
Augustine.
Augustine, there we go. Bring him up.
I just came with Olivia, and I heard that we're doing this, so I join. I've also never read this out loud, so we'll try it. I love humping and bumping. My hips against your hips, lips so close. I love it the most. And please don't take any innuendo. I don't mean any innuendo. Please take it at face value. I love humping and bumping. Grinding reminding me of something juvenile. I love my humping like I love my martinis. Dry. And I've never had a martini, and I'm not sure if I'd even like them. But I've had some humping, and I know I want some. It's play. That there was so much care. It's before the foreplay, taking the scenic way to second base, trying to angle it just right to get that spot where we'll never pass through. Determination on our face, pushing harder than the other, our shaky breaths flutter. But you know, now I got too much rug burn down there. So I took up celibacy, you see? Because I got God telling me, you keep thinking these thoughts you got, you're gonna burn for eternity. So Lord, please come to me. Because that friction between our denim jeans burnt a hole in my memory. And that empty space gets bigger each time I visit it. Thank you.
Up next, we have Dawn Spector. Bring her up.
Not a microphone. I'll do a quick one since I just got here. Still here. I am transformed in the night. Lines erased, inhibitions escape. I am reclined, the shape of my body not interfering with clothes. I am kind. Awake, I forsake the ego it has taken so long to make. Undusted mirrors, invisibility potions, and inner fears, ungracefully aging, mind and vision slipping, still here.
Up next, we have Gia Acosta, is that right? I'm sorry. Yeah, I did. I tried to remember it. I forgot it this far. So, G. Arcos.
Let's bring her up.
This poem is called Letting Go in Venus Retrograde. I wrote it all out, every nasty word, any terrifying thought, 2 pages filled and thrown into the fire pit. Under the beauty of the new moon, during the witching hour of Leo season, I started a fire and watched jealousy, sadness, resentment, the past, the unchangeable, burn. I thought the paper would ignite much quicker, but the fiery change was a slow one. And I embraced the mesmerizing dance of transformation as the past curdled away in the embers, until all that was left was the luna, the moon, the ash, and my heart full of love and lightness again. Even if this moment is all I get, I am so grateful for the ability of letting go.
And up next, we have Joe Cardinal. Let's bring him up.
I've never read in public before, but the poem that I've selected is, I'm afraid it's going to divide the crowd, because it seems there's a lot of people here who are born after the 80s, and this is an homage to a fragrance that you'll be familiar with the name, Old Spice, but the problem is the Old Spice of yesteryear is not what it is today. So this is to that scent, and it's called Old Spice Aftershave. Old Spice Aftershave, the scent that best represents the duality of man. That swarthy seafaring cologne brewed somewhere between a Spanish brothel and a North Atlantic shipwreck. It smells like leather and legend, like salt, musk, and generational trauma. It's Christmas morning with all your uncles, laughing too loud, arguing about taxes, red face from rhyme, repressed feelings. Or it's a chair left empty because Dad went out for cigarettes sometime in 92 and became a myth somewhere between the end of the driveway and the nearest gas station and the edge of the universe. Old Spice is the smell of masculinity as performance art, a play where every actor is drunk, late, and owes child support. Men who never cried in public but wrote poems on the back speeding tickets stuffed in glove compartments. Men who built you a treehouse and then moved into one of their own after the third divorce. It is the fragrance of contradiction. Every tender bastard, every violent sweetheart, the sweetest man you ever knew, with occasional moments of spice. Sweet and spicy, Old Spice. It's the aroma of stoic failure, the clone of Cold War victory. Men who taught you how to tie a tie and how to lie to yourself. Fake it until you make it. It is the scent of rugged charm and crushed beer cans, of shaving nicks and shouting matches, the musk of everything we were told a man should be and every goddamn reason we should be in therapy. So splash it on, fellas. Smell like Grandpa's ghosts, a war hero, and a terrible husband. Smell like the good intentions of a man who never figured out how to say I love you without first finishing his drink. Smell like the Marlboro Man's funeral. Smell like failure, but with dignity, because sometimes the only thing left of a man is the way he smelled when he still believed he could be better. And that's all a man gets to keep. Thank you.
Let's give Joe another hand. Now I'm going to read a poem and end round one, but before I do that, we've heard some great first round readings, though. Let's go ahead and give yourselves and everybody else a hand again. This is called Rails.
Westbound train boarded this morning. No destination, no getting off. Nearly a continent away, taking it all the way to the West Coast. I'm anonymous. A number. Ticket number 20 via Rail Canada, economy car 4 window, Toronto to Vancouver. That's who I'll be for a few days. At least tens of thousands of others have been the same. Same name, same seat, same train, same car, same ticket. I boarded alone. I will ride this train, disembark the same. This trip isn't about people, just country, landscapes, the closeness of it, days of it, 4. Never considered the not enough airplane with its glossy cover magazine ride showing everything and nothing. Its few hour long, short expedition without heart, memoryless after. I need something more. Want a trip that has a pulse. I will disembark on the West Coast, stay maybe a day or two, then get back on board. Come back the whole way. Again, alone and not. Thank you. And you just heard from Poets at Art Fest, second open mic session in the first round, Fiona McMillan, Ken Chin, Melissa Thorne, Ty Grove, Anna Johnson, Olivia Parent, Jared Augustine, Don Spector, Gia Arcos, Joe Cardinal, and me. Coming up in round two, you're going to hear Fiona again, Ken, Melissa, Olivia, Don, Gia, and me. Let's go ahead and jump back in. Thanks so much. Let's go ahead and bring up Fiona again for the second round.
All right. I didn't think about reading two, but I have a lot of work, so I'm going to pick one right now and just go for it. While I do that, I want to say thank you so much, and this is a really nice event. It's so nice to see everyone cheering everyone on, and everyone has such wonderful work. All right. I am going to do... Oh, this is very nerve-wracking. Okay. I'm going to do one called 7. This is a very old one, and I have also never read it out loud, so I thought it would be a cool one to try today. All right. This one's called 7. It pains me to admit, but since my recent lobotomy, in the form of delicately placed yellow capsules, full meals, and speaking directly, of course, I honestly cannot say that I remember being yours. I remember what it felt like, well, at least I think I do. God, I hope I can still grasp onto that last piece of serenity, but speaking it now, I'm not feeling so confident in my answers. We will deal with that thought later, though. I remember what it felt like, to be held by you, to be looked at with an unfamiliar and wide-eyed affection. I remember what it felt like to possess the answers for every question riddling the walls of your tiny existence, held somewhere in my 163 centimeters of fleshy mass. For how could I forget something so laughably endearing? And when I close my eyes, I can remember moments, fleeting, but their scarcity doesn't make them any less real. And I have to remind myself of that now. I can remember what it meant to me, but I cannot piece together the ways in which that meaning was made. The days we spent together, the long nights of unconscious affection, sometimes I wonder if I made it all up. And therefore, if you were just a mere figment of my far too active imagination. I think that's the saddest thought I've been able to muster up since my beautiful sedation, and I think that's why I need to look at you for a couple seconds above average each time we meet since our slow departure. I catch myself digging my crimson nails into your neck as we share a polite, societally acceptable embraces. 7 seconds, no more. Any less and there's still feelings anymore, and I know that I will never let go. 7 is cool. 7 shines in its mutuality. 7 says that I didn't break your heart and you only fractured mine. And that shared 7 seconds also serves as a scapegoat, bring me back to my reality, even if it is just for a brief moment in time. To remember the only thing that feels true these days, which is that you really did happen. I did not imagine you, as I have most things in my life, and I did not create you, as I have everything that I am proud of thus far. You were independent of my being. You were not in debt to me, nor am I to you, well, at least not in the physical sense. You were really there. I mean, really, really there. And writing about it now, I can't believe the first few lines of this one, because at this moment, I can't shake your likeness for the life of me. I can still feel you grabbing onto my being as we intertwine in floral coverings, and if I sit with this strangely pleasant feeling long enough, I know I will be able to bask in your glow once again. And that proposition petrifies me, for I fear with each moment of blissful recollection, I am stepping closer to my final destruction. I come into myself for the last time as I actively decide to shake your image, yet there you remain, time and time again. I can't seem to get rid of you, and even worse, I can no longer pretend that you did not happen. Can anyone see us? Has it been longer than 7 seconds? I don't think anyone is counting. Thank you.
I wrote this one last October for my wife, simply entitled Lorraine. The leaves are brilliantly red. The long summer is closing. Trees seem to be even more colorful than I have ever seen. Sunsets are glowing orange red. Falling leaves begin to fill the streets. It is autumn. Summer has gone. Are you leaving too, my love? Look locked inside this human form, unable to move. Dementia, what a terrible thing. But your eyes light up when you see me. You could laugh, you cry out when it hurts. You're still there, all of you. We knew a long time ago that it was coming. When it came, we dealt with it the best way we could, taking one day at a time. But it was inevitable. Leaving you at long-term care was the hardest thing that I've ever done. Oh, my love, how did we get this way? You came to me like a warm summer breeze. You breathed life into me. I was empty, and you fulfilled me. Often I've asked why did it have to be you? But then the brightest stars burn out the fastest, and we were stars. We were the ones that followed our hearts. We were ones that defied the odds and lived to tell of it. Maybe we did too much. We are soulmates. We knew that a long time ago. How else could two people with diametrically opposite aesthetics become so close to each other? So when it is your time, you will not be going alone. Half of my soul goes with you. And when I leave, I will find you and be with you, wherever you may be. Don't be afraid, my love. I won't be far behind. Just some loose ends to take care of. And as usual, I'll be the last person leaving, and I'll shut the lights. From your lover, your soulmate, your husband, for life and after, Ken.
Up next, Melissa. Bring her up.
This one has a couple swear words in it, but those are my kids, so it's fine. It's called Mother Hawk. I hear the starlings outside my window. They're talking about me, though I don't speak their language. Virginia Woolf claimed they speak Greek. I disagree. Their lyricism suggests a romantic tongue, French, maybe Italian. Their tweets call out, chirps echo back, before devolving into manic laughter. With beady eyes, they peek into my second-story bedroom, mocking my apron belly, uneven breasts, before retreating to the neighbor's hedges to plan their next move in this game of psychological warfare. A mother dove perches in the robin's old nest atop the downspout. She can stay. She is quiet, a newcomer. I burn the rice again, distracted by my thinking, my own ambient noise. These days, I ask too many questions with too many answers. It's all too much. Too much for a weeknight dinner, too much for a Tuesday, too many days left in the week, too many dinners left to make, too much for this poem. The starlings probably love the smell of smoke, proof their earlier missiles struck true. I'm aflame with self-contempt. I should cackle back one day or hurl my children's diapers at their nest, retaliate for every shit grenade they launch into our pool. I used to talk to the birds before I grew up, before I became a mother, before they mocked me from the hedges. I stood barefoot where tame lawn met wild forest, traced the edge of shadow. I whistled high and low in answer to a chickadee's lonesome call, hooted with the unseen barred owl, kikied alongside the mother Cooper's hawk. She was a fierce matriarch. She taught her babies to hunt, using my cat as a decoy. Each new clutch practiced their art on him, a beating heart for their predatory circle. They never caught him, by her design, most likely. Once, that cat disappeared for 6 long months. His prodigal return transformed him into an indoor cat, for his own good. He lived for 17 years, made sure I grew up. The Cooper's hawks left after that. I guess that's motherhood. We slaying our children's shit from nest to pool, diaper to garbage pail, burn dinners, form hunting circles, go to war with the birds. Maybe I should learn Italian, parlay with the birds again, get answers to my weeknight questions, like how to cook rice, keep up with inflation, answer my son's questions about God, shed this default parent mental load, or maybe I'll get a cat and entice the hawks back.
Let's bring Olivia back up.
So usually every summer I go on a road trip to Quebec with my parents. So I'm always in the back seat. So that's just the perspective we're going with here. It's called Road Trip. My father looks to see my mother sleeping in the passenger seat. And once he does, he continues to. With each new pasture, fields of straw yellow or ripe green, he looks to the field out the right window and then to her. Though I can only see his profile from the back seat, when he searches for her within these fields, I see a light in his calm eyes. Her gold-streaked gray hair, soft, not coarse, seemingly reflects against everything, even the field, even him, even me. She stirs, and he lets out a humph of content. And then so do I. Because this is something new. My mom never sleeps in the car. She's always too busy making sure he doesn't have a heavy foot or to give advice about the big passing trucks that came out of nowhere and box him in. Or to look past his soft face at the bushes, fields, trees, mountainsides, and then back to him and then back to me. Yes, this is something new. She's lost in sleep, not thought. Eventually, she does wake, and then they look at each other, and then to me, and without having to take in
The world of green, yellow, and blue we all pass by. We all see peace in each other. Road trip.
And bring up Don.
I brought three poems that kind of are related, but the first one, never mind, I'll just read the second one. There's a story, but you don't need it. Until. Water lives. It is the story of what lies ahead. It is the past that we remember as weather and seasons bring us together. We float and gaze above, weightless and free. Oceans, aggressive and pacific, move this planet ship. At the beach, we are released from humanity's debris. This is the connection. Water is we. The horizon, the climate, the hurricanes and reflected sunbeams. We flow in synchronicity until impeded. You put me in a cage and think I'm happy as I count each grain of sand. You label and you pay for communal land until depleted. I can be who I am behind enemy lines. You can find me trying to survive. Trying to find access to the beach where there are no ATVs, where hermit crabs and lobsters live in harmony. Endless summer is illusory, water contact necessary. Our future connected to the blood of our planet, restricted until afflicted. The sickness expanded to other planets. We gaze seeking water as each grain of sand in this land is counted, owned, and hologrammed. We live in measured parcels, fenced in and surrounded at the discretion of development until it's all gone.
And let's bring up Gia again. I was just going by first names. Okay, cool. Gia.
I also have a booth where I'm selling my book. It's Orange 50 or 050 just behind the poetry tent, so please come join us. We also have cute bookmarks. The one I'm reading today is called Warrior. Sometimes I sit back and wonder why. Why certain people come in and out of your life. Why situations transpire the way they do. Why the need for grief, heartache, and suffering. I sit back contemplating, worrying, and in doing so, suffering twice. Maybe there are answers to these questions. Maybe they're not for us to know. What is known to me, I grow wiser, stronger, yet softer, despite what passes. Sometimes it is difficult, the weight of sorrow too heavy. At that moment, you have two choices. Sit back and worry at the damned situation, or stand tall, knowing who you are, knowing you cannot change what is meant to be, and not allowing the situation to take away the power you have earned as a warrior. Today, I choose warrior and not worrying because I know no other way through.
And this has been really great. I'm going to read one poem to take us out of here, but this is... It's been a lot of fun. It was wonderful poetry and stories and fun. And so give yourselves and everybody else. I will tell you, coming up at There are three sessions of featured poets this afternoon. Coming up at 12:30, Judith Popiel, Beth Marie Mihalska, Eric Folsom, and Gwen Whitford. And then at 2:30, so there's usually about an hour or so reading period, and then almost an hour break. And so Pat McLaughlin, Elizabeth Green, Alan Breezemaster, Kate Rogers, and Al Moritz. And then you'll hear Don later this afternoon, and the tie again, Richard M. Grove, along with Amy Cadman and Sarah Wells. So that's who's on store for the day. There is tomorrow's schedule, too. No open mic, though, tomorrow, but there are featured poets. So if you're at all interested, you can check out that poster, sort of, or the one over here. Anyway, my heartfelt thanks to all of you for coming out. I was sitting here like at 10 minutes before it was going to start, and there was like nobody here, and it just blossomed. It was like a flower, so it was pretty cool. Thank you all. Oh, no, thank you. Give yourselves, again, another hand. This is called We Are. We are not what we do, even less what we say. We are the conversations within us. No, not the superficial monologues, but the deeper dialogues between the halves, the ever two selves of each of us. We are not the legacies we believe we are or leave behind. Those fluid things become scattered. It's not legacy we should seek, but instead legitimacy, an ethics about us, an honesty, a compassion. Even in those times when it is less popular, less easy, and in the all of this life, truly, we are and become each much more our dreams than our days. Thank you. And you just heard from this year's poets at ArtFest, 4-day poetry festival, the very final, not yet aired session of it. And it was the second of two open mics, this one held on June 30th. And in it, you heard first round and second round readings by Fiona McMillan, Ken Chin, Melissa Thorne, Richard Ty Grove, Anna Johnson, Olivia Parent, Jared Augustin, Don Spector, Gia Arcos, Joe Cardinal, and me. And my heartfelt thanks to all of them for their wonderful readings that day, and an equal thanks to all those who came out to listen and support. And heartfelt thanks as well to each of you out there for tuning into the show this afternoon. So thank you. It is just turning 58 minutes after 4 o'clock. So I'm going to start to kind of conclude this hour and let you know you are and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce, here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock, and we do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And just a quick reminder that I upload both hours of this show to my personal blog space for it at Finding a Voice on CFRCFM.wordpress.com. They will remain there for 3 years. And also, before we start to slide into the second hour, I will mention an upcoming event. It's the monthly open mic. It's at the Yum Cafe. It happens the first Tuesday night of every month. Check it out, I guess, if you can. Because a lot of times, I mean, once a month I air here the readings from that open mic on this show. So I share those as well. And that's why I'm bringing it up, because it's coming up this Tuesday.
Doors open at 6:30. The Alma is located at the corner of Princess and Charles Street. And there is actually a bus stop nearby as well, but it's only about four or five, maybe six blocks north of Princess Street on Montreal. And also for the show next week, I'm quite sure that I'm going to be airing a book launch that featured Calista Markotich and also Liz